The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, it's Whiny Wednesday. How are you?
Wow, what a way to start.
It's not even a way to start. We're just halfway into it.
Okay, well, you know, I was fascinated in this Jerusalem Post mediated video thing that went on between the chief rabbi and the chief justice. I don't know if people have seen it and read about it and whether their views about the views that were presented in that interview, but I think it's a slightly different view than the one that we're used to seeing
out of South
from
Africa.
Senior South African officials.
Yeah, and I think that's amazing because the point that the Chief Justice made was that South Africa would have so much more to contribute to the Israel-Palestine or the Palestinian-Israeli conflict if they weren't so one-sided with it. But by being so one-sided and not seeing not really having any sympathy for Israel, he didn't say that, but that's really what it's about. They have discredited themselves and unfortunately removed themselves from relevance around this discussion. And I think he's right, and I think the
South African regime has come out, you know, so anti-Israel in many respects. Is a little unfortunate. I mean, I'm not necessarily asking or demanding that everybody supports Israel and supports everything that Israel does, but I think a measure of balance is always very welcome. And the Chief Justice, interestingly, presented himself as a Christian, and it was interesting that he came out quite supportive, saying, you know, that if we don't support Israel, then, you know, from a Christian point of view, that's a very bad thing. So it was very interesting, his views, and it's been given some airtime here as well.
Yeah, I would argue that his view is actually reflective of many South Africans, maybe even the majority of South Africans on the ground. You know, the fact that the BDS, and they did this some years ago, they realized they were losing the battle of public, you know, in the public, and what they did was they went behind the scenes and they burrowed into the ANC, who were a very, very soft target. I mean, they'll be bought by anybody, really, or certainly in the past they would. So it was quite an easy way in, and they've done, you know, the damage that the BDS has done is that they have got the ANC to reflect a view or to parrot a view that doesn't necessarily reflect the view of the people. So BDS, in fact, have damaged South Africa quite significantly in this way, because in doing so, they've cut off any advantage and connection that Israel could actually provide to South Africa in so many areas.
I think that the ANC links run a lot deeper than that. I mean, maybe, you know, the newer generation, not so much, but certainly the generation of the freedom fighters were very linked to the PLO being, you know, that they considered themselves to be similar in many respects, and they supported each other in the apartheid days.
Yes.
And I think that there was a certain element of continuing that friendship, that's common support between each other, even after
the fall of apartheid. You know, many things can be true. So you can be supportive of the Palestinian cause as the ANC, but you can also be supportive of a country, you know, and see both sides of it. They're not mutually exclusive.
I agree with that.
You know,
The Chief Justice said he believed that those who curse Israel will themselves be cursed. Obviously quoting Christian scriptures, but I think that was his way of trying to present the fact that he feels that the government could be a little bit more even-handed in the way that it deals with things. Interesting, fascinating story. We're not going to talk about corona today, but unfortunately the situation in Israel continues to get worse. More than 400 people diagnosed just in one day yesterday. And so, you know, unfortunately the trend that we've seen over the past few days has continued. And a lot of people talking about it, but I'm not sure that people are doing enough about it. I think that's really the bottom line on it at the moment.
I hear that. Up to 7 people reported to have been killed in airstrikes last night. That's against Syrian targets that have been attributed to Israel. What's more, what's known?
Yeah, again, I mean, you know, and once more, I mean, you know, the IDF and the Israeli government are not saying anything. But I think there were a few things that were quite interesting about the airstrikes that took place in Syria last night. First of all, they seem to have been directed at locations that are new, that are not places that have been hit in the past. In the western central part of Syria, apparently there was a second attack that took place only hours after the first attack that took place in the south and east of Syria. There are reports that the strikes were against warehouses used by Iranian militias to store weapons and ammunition. And of course, these casualties have been reported. There were videos that were circulated that showed quite a lot of damage, fires burning, large explosions. Apparently two of those people who were killed were actually from the Syrian army, while the others were either from Iranian militia or linked. Some reports are even saying civilians were killed. The Syrian state media did not blame Israel for the airstrikes. But the opposition and other foreign reports apparently claimed that Israel was responsible. It seems entirely plausible, absolutely plausible. We know that Israel is very much watching what's going on. I think the thing that interests me more than anything are the things that we don't know. Why Israel chose to use this opportunity, if indeed it was Israel making these attacks. What was important about now, here and now, and what was going on there? I mean, the fact that there might be storage of armaments and ammunition and equipment and things like that, I think is fairly well understood. I mean, there is a lot of storage. There are many storage facilities and a lot of storage going on of this armor, the armaments and the ammunition being used both by the Syrian army and by Iranian-backed militia. But the question is, why now? What was happening, or what was the opportunity that presented itself at this particular point? There was one report that I saw that even an anti-aircraft missile system had been targeted. It's very, very difficult to know what's true, what's not true, what's just fabrications. But certainly the Israeli government and the IDF are not getting involved in this discussion, and it will just remain as is for now, I guess.
Right, which is just assumptions, I guess. Mm-hmm. And tell us about Turkey continuing to flex its muscles in the region.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in Libya, and there's a huge battle going on in Libya, and Turkey is very, very active in all that's going on in Libya. And it's interesting that this battle in Libya is pitting Turkey against Egypt, because the Egyptians are supporting one group within Libya. The Turks are supporting another group. But it's also about President Erdogan, who really is trying to establish himself personally as much more influential in the region. We've already seen that they're trying to get involved in this issue of the gas pipeline, which Greece, Cyprus, and Israel are trying to build from the gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean towards mainland Europe. And the Turks are claiming that a certain area which the pipeline is due to cross, which the Greeks are claiming to be their own territorial waters, are now being claimed by Turkey. And Turkey are teaming up with this group in Libya to claim to divide up territorial waters. And then we're seeing that Turkey is becoming very, very involved on the ground in Libya. And in addition to that, Turkey has got a lot to say about the possible annexation. And so, you know, Israel is kind of not being drawn in directly to a head-to-head battle with Turkey. But the situation between Israel and Turkey is clearly uncomfortable. It's not a very convenient situation. At one stage, Israel and Turkey had quite good relations, I would say, diplomatic relations, where there was a great deal of cooperation and support from both sides. Ever since the Mavi Marmara incident, it's been kind of on the downturn. Of course, the ambassadors were withdrawn from each country for quite an extended period of time. But the problem is that Erdogan himself is trying to establish himself in a very, very strong way within Turkey and more broadly within the region. And as a result of that, Israel is going to have to expect that he's going to use Israel as a little bit of a target in order to potentially improve his own standing and raise him up within Turkey and beyond. So I think that Israel is just watching watching this quite cautiously, but certainly events in Libya are concerning, and the way that Egypt potentially could be drawn in there is also a little concerning. But the Turks right now, and especially Erdogan, are trying to establish some sort of a more influential role within the region, which I think is an interesting development that we're seeing.
It is indeed. Six Israeli companies have been named in the top 100 tech pioneers in the world. That's by the World Economic Forum. Incredible. What are the details of these companies, Anthony?
So they're all names that I had really not heard of, and some of them had been around already for some time. I mean, I'll just go through some very, very quick, you know, brief descriptions. 3D Signals, it's a company that's based in Kfar Saba, and they help manufacturing plants speed up what they call the digital transformation through the deployment of sensors that apparently can be fitted on all kinds of machines, and the sensors provide manufacturers with visibilities to what's happening on the production floor, and they reckon that they could improve productivity by up to 30%, reduce operating and labor costs. And so this is 3D Signals. It's been around already for 5 years, and it's a company that we don't know about, but apparently the World Economic Forum do. We've got Aleph Farms, which is a company based in Rehovot. It's also 3 years old already, not particularly new, but newish. And this is a company that grows meat directly from cattle cells. So what they've managed to do is isolate the cells that are responsible for the tissue growth in the animals, and then they actually grow these cells outside of the animal to form muscle tissue, which is kind of a steak. That's really what it is. So they are growing meat to look and feel and taste like meat, but without killing animals. I'm not sure what the kashrut implications of that are, but we're not going to go into that. There's also a company called MorphiSec, which is a Beersheba-based cybersecurity company, established 6 years ago, producing cybersecurity solutions that has been named by the World Economic Forum. Optibus is a Tel Aviv-based firm, 10 years old almost, and this is one that enables public transportation providers to give users a service that's almost like a taxi ride, but that is cheap and it's direct and it's at public transportation costs. I have no idea exactly how they do this on their platform, but apparently they seem to have caught the attention of the World Economic Forum. Another company is a company called Prospera, and Prospera is a company that's based in Tel Aviv, and it uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to help farmers monitor their crops. They use infield cameras and they use sensors, and the technology allows farmers to more accurately remote manage their field by getting information on what's happening on the ground, almost on a leaf-by-leaf basis. That's the way at least that they describe it. Just one more very quickly is SIBO. It's a Tel Aviv-based firm, 8 years old, and this is a company that's developed artificial intelligence that helps manufacturers predict and prevent inefficiencies in the production process. So it's being used in huge companies like Nestle and Skoda and PepsiCo and others. This is companies that are already quite successful and all been well, you know, they've all been named on this World Economic Forum list. So I think it's fascinating to see what's bubbling below the surface, because we all hear the big names.
It's the same names that we hear. And these ones.
Right. And here are the names that I, living in this country, had never heard of before. And these guys are doing amazing work.
Absolutely incredible. Amazing to hear. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time.